The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike. Each and every day, it's my joy to be able to bring you a guest from somewhere across either the region of Florida or today from Washington, D.C. It is my honor to have a young lady named Harvest Prude. Just a quick word, Harvest is a graduate of the World Journalism Institute as well as Patrick Henry College. She resides in the D.C. area and I think most importantly and most tied into what we're talking about today, she's a Capitol Hill correspondent for World Magazine. Harvest Prude, welcome to my program.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Well, you know, you and I have a mutual friend in J.C. Derrick. And J.C., I understand, a predecessor in your department there at World. And he's now part of our group, our sister station, if you will. It's not actually a station. It's a digital newspaper, for crying out loud. And he is our publisher for that. And that's very exciting that he's doing that. So we feel like we have a just a world-class guy leading our Main Street Daily News, as it is called. And he has introduced so many wonderful people from both World Magazine, then other contacts that he had through World. And you are one of them. So first of all, Harvest, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? And were your parents believers? How did you come to know the Lord? All of those things.
Sure. So I grew up in a small town called Paducah, Kentucky.
Are you kidding me?
Do you know Paducah?
This is a crazy story. I had to interrupt you. I am a Duke of Paducah. I'm not kidding you. All right, so my hometown is not very far from you. I grew up in Evansville, Indiana.
Yes, okay.
Okay, so that's not very far at all. And no. I was given a service award from the United States Air Force back when I was in radio in the 70s. And one of the awards that was given to me was I was named a Duke of Paducah.
Wow. So now I can say I know a real Duke.
You know a real Duke, and you talk to one on the radio. And Harvest, that and about $4.50 might buy you a latte at Starbucks, but that's about it. So you grew up in Paducah, Kentucky, home of Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Correct. Yes, you know all the fun facts. Yes, and both of my parents were strong Christians growing up. My dad was like a minister at our church. And, you know, so most importantly, we spent a lot of time around the family dinner table talking about faith and the Bible. Large family. I actually have 7 siblings. So it was always just a fun, busy time. And I was a big bookworm as well. So I was always reading. And when I'd run out of fiction books, I'd go upstairs to my dad's study and I'd start reading like theology books as well, which is kind of a funny pastime for a kid.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So I was saved at a young age, but I would say my faith became very real and very important to me when I was maybe a little older, like late middle school, early high school.
That's pretty common too. And, you know, you answered one of the questions that I had written down for you was the fact that, you know, as a journalist, you know, I wondered what the early signs that you had, but you've already said that you were a bookworm. And I think all writers probably began as really, really good readers. That seems to be an important thing, doesn't it?
I would agree. I think it's probably pretty hard to enjoy writing and love it if you don't first have a love for reading. So that was my gateway into it. And then I also, when I was, you know, older, a little bit later in high school, I started interning for a woman who ran a family magazine out of her house. So I was just an administrative assistant, but after a while, I kind of confessed that I was really interested in writing and would love to, you know, try my hand at writing an article sometime. And so she very graciously allowed me to, you know, try reporting and writing an article. And I tell you, when that article was first published and I had, I think it was like they paid $40 per article, I just felt like it was just the grandest feeling ever. So that was kind of my gateway.
Yeah, you were in the big time when you're getting paid to do what you love to do like that. That's awesome.
Right.
Oh, I tell you what, that is so great. And I just love hearing people's stories, and especially just realizing that your dad was a pastor and having a pastoral study upstairs going. And when you look back at that time when you kind of would invade that room and look at his bookshelves, was there a particular author that just really grabbed your heart?
I think that is a good question. There were a lot of books that I liked quite a lot. I really enjoyed and was really stirred by, well, maybe enjoy is the wrong word, but Fox's Book of Martyrs really made a big impact on me, I think, as a young kid.
Now, that can be a little bit of a morbid read right there. That's pretty scary for a young person.
Yeah, I mean, it's so gripping. If you haven't read it, it's just, or if any of your listeners haven't read it, it's just account after account of, you know, people dying for their faith. And I remember this one story in particular about this young woman who was facing, I think, the Spanish Inquisition, some sort of Inquisition, and she was on the rack or something, and she recanted. But then as soon as she got off, she was like, I recanted in a moment of cowardice, but because of the pain, but I hold to my confession of faith, and I'm never going to renounce Jesus, even if you put me on again. And I, you know, and then that just really struck me, I think.
Oh, wow. The kind of commitment that we read in that book, that's the kind of commitment that so many had in the first century. And a lot of people around the world, we have a program on the weekends here called The Voices of the Martyrs. And, you know, it's sad to say that even in this day and age, there are many people who are being put to the sword because of their faith in Jesus Christ. And so it's not just something that happened in the day of Fox's Book of Martyrs, but it's happening, sadly, in our world today. And many people believe that we're not beyond having real serious persecution to some degree, even here in our own country. And that's something, obviously, we're all concerned about and all praying about. And I know that you see a whole lot. When you were in that first phase of your life, when you were writing, could you have ever imagined that you'd be a professional correspondent in D.C.?
Oh, no. It was far from my mind. I mean, I did hope to do something with writing and journalism, but I didn't imagine that the Lord would, I never imagined the Lord would have me come to D.C. and work for World, which was a publication I grew up reading from the time I was like 8 years old. I can remember poring over it. So, yeah, I just feel very grateful to be able to cover some very important issues. And one of them, like you mentioned, is the persecution of Christians. That's a big focus of a lot of Christians in Washington, international religious freedom, especially. Mm-hmm. And those have been some of the most rewarding articles that I've been able to cover and issues I've been able to follow as well.
How did you get to World? Tell us that story.
Sure. So I went to college, like you said in the introduction, at Patrick Henry College, which is a Christian liberal arts school, and I studied journalism. And my professor there, Dr. Les Tillers, worked as a mailbag editor for World. So he, you know, would edit readers' correspondence. Mm-hmm. And he really encouraged me to go to World's Journalism Institute. So I did that. I believe it was summer after my junior year, and it's like a couple weeks intensive journalism boot camp where you get a little feature writing training, a little straight news writing training, and believe it or not, you get a little bit of radio training as well.
Is that right? Did you like that?
You know, I prefer being behind the print, but radio definitely has its appeal as well. And I have so much respect for everyone in the field. So after that, I got offered a longer internship for the summer after I graduated. So I went to Texas. I studied under Marvin Olasky, our editor-in-chief, mm-hmm. and got offered the job in D.C. that August. So I moved up, I guess, a little over 2 years now in 2018. And I've been doing this ever since.
Do you like the D.C. area?
I do. It never slows down. It never stops, which I guess is, big city life in general. Mm-hmm. And coming from Paducah, that's just a very different pace. But it's good. It stretched me. It's grown me a lot.
Oh, I can't imagine what it was like for a young lady from Paducah, Kentucky, to be living in D.C. And, you know, that you're right. It is a busy city, not unlike any large city like New York or Chicago. But there's always something going on, like you said. Those subways, the metro, as it is called there, mm-hmm. is always Correct. Going someplace. And 1 year we visited, took my whole family back, and that would be in the somewhere around 2005, I believe it was, and stayed with friends that would be in Maryland. And we drove every morning, we drove over to one of the metro centers that was there in Maryland, and we would catch the metro and take it to wherever we were going to go that day. The public transportation system in D.C. is just so great, and you can get off, and then, boy, now you're near the Smithsonian, or now you're near Arlington. It's just amazing to be able to go through all of those different areas, see all of the different sites that are full of history, the monuments. What a wonderful area to visit. And so friends who are listening, if you've never done that, make that part of your plans for the future. You got to do it. I'm talking today again with Harvest Prude. And Harvest is now with, and how long has it been since you joined?
It's been since 2018. So, coming up on 3 years now, I guess.
This is tremendous. She is the Capitol Hill correspondent. And so that means you're regularly inside that dome building that was the site of just some sheer terror last week. We're going to talk more about that in our next segment. But what is your beat like? What would be a typical day?
Yeah, good question. It does change from day to day, but a lot of it is just reading the news, seeing what's kind of on the schedule for today, whether there are any important hearings, whether there are any political rallies or events. I mean, it also is kind of a seasonal, it varies season to season, whether we're in an election season, a campaign rallying season, or more of a legislative one. Mm-hmm. So there's always a lot to cover. I do have a weekly political newsletter. So I'll break down one story that's important that's happening that our readers should know about that week. And in the newsletter, I'll also include, other line items that I can't maybe flesh out in more detail, but that readers should be keeping an eye on. I also cover a lot of issues that you've already talked about. International religious freedom is a big one. There's a lot of domestic policy, national security policy that impacts how countries abroad, treat persecuted minority groups, and that often includes Christians. I cover a lot of pro-life policy. I'm always at the March for Life in Washington. Mm-hmm. Lots of family issues. So yeah, it definitely keeps me busy. And I feel like I learn just as much as I hope our readers do as I'm covering these things.
I had a chance to talk to Emily Bells last week from World, and she's stationed in New York City. And I did not know this, but her uncle, I believe it was the founder and the originator of World Magazine. And that was a fascinating realization, because it was in 86, 87 when we got our first copy at the church where I was serving. And we all became lovers of this magazine. I subscribed to it, got it delivered to my home. It was something that I just thought, this is a new thing that God has given us, because it is sharply written. That's what has always been, in my mind, an earmark of World Magazine. It's the journalism quality is on the par of any other major news publication in the world. And not only that, but talk about timely, great analysis, great thoughts. I mean, this had to be for you, for someone who grew up loving not only theology, but loving the written word and the ability to express yourself. This had to be like a real homecoming thing for you.
Oh, I really appreciate those kind words. I absolutely felt that as well when I had the chance to intern for World. Just the training that I received, they sharpen you. They go line by line, making sure every fact is correct. Every every sentence is written without flabbiness or excess. They really take the quality of the writing seriously. But also, if you work for World, you are able to be open about your faith. Not only open, but you're encouraged to connect your faith with the issues you're covering. And that's a blessing in a news environment where a lot of, people just, they can't do the same at their publications.
You know, I have to ask this question because it is wonderful to have the kind of framework and fellowship. And I guess you could even probably include the word accountability in that. So you have a surrounding you, you have a community there at World that would be like-minded people. I know that the people that are there are, by and large, committed to Jesus. They love the Lord, working for that newspaper, but or that magazine. But you are in one of the leading, if not in this day and age, maybe in 2021, it could be considered the leading hot spot for everything from the cancel culture, political correctness, a new ideology that's somewhat being not only introduced, but maybe in some ways almost force-fed upon the American people. What is it like for people who are like yourself, believers, and yet you're bumping every day into people that feel that not only do they disagree with you, but you might be some sense of a threat to them?
Yes, it is a tough environment for sure. I will say that I think something that has been of immense help to me is my coworkers who do provide that, robust Christian community, but also involvement in a local church, staying committed to my faith by fellowshipping with other believers. That is super important. I mean, wherever you are located, there are always going to be temptations to temptations or calls or pressure to either water down your faith, not take your faith as seriously, only express your faith in certain kinds of ways that are palatable to the community you're surrounded with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just so important to have that grounding and to have that community that can keep you sharp, especially in, an environment where every single day you're covering a lot of news, and it can be discouraging. Just having that like-mindedness in your close communities is so important.
That's well said. This is Harvest Prude, my guest today on Afternoons with Mike. Harvest is a Capitol Hill correspondent for World Magazine. She lives in the D.C. area. And one other thing that we're going to be talking about in the next segment just after this break is the fact that on January the 6th, Harvest was an eyewitness to all that went on. She was actually inside the Capitol building. And what happened to her if it's enough, not enough to, boy, I tell you what, make your heart beat a little faster. I can't imagine what would. We're going to hear all about that from Harvest. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're in tune to the Shepherd. I'm on the line with a young lady named Harvest Prude. Harvest is the Capitol Hill correspondent for World Magazine, and she's in D.C. And Harvest and I, sadly, we share a commonality, something that goes beyond just being from the Midwest. She from Paducah, Kentucky. I was born and raised Evansville, Indiana. We're not talking about region, though. We're talking about the fact that I am a survivor of and just recently got over the COVID virus. Oh, my word. What a horrible ordeal that was. But yet my case is so much better than what some are fighting right now for their very lives in the hospital with problems breathing. I get it. I really, my heart goes out to you. But Harvest is also positive for COVID, and she is in her second week, just beginning her second week of this thing, and is still in quarantine. I am amazed that you had the energy or the desire to talk with me today, but you're doing great. You sound fine, and I'm grateful for that. Are you feeling okay today?
Well, thank you. Yes, I'm feeling okay today. I think it's partly a God thing. There have definitely been days where, you know, hardly got out of bed, but I'm having a little bit more energy today. So I'm thankful for it. I'm glad to be with you. Yeah, it's been a bit of an ordeal, hoping that I'll be on the up soon.
Well, I'm so thankful you're here to talk about something that is so much on the minds and on the hearts. And I think it's great to have a Christian eyewitness account that you're going to be able to give us. And, you know, there, regardless of who one voted for or who one is still for, we're not going to get into those levels of politics today on this program. I tell you, the things that went on the 6th, to say the least, did not bring about the intended consequences, the intended results. And, you know, I think things like that go farther to take us in the opposite direction than they could ever help. And I know for you to be there, you're there, you're expecting, what I'd love, first of all, for you to begin with what your expectations were on January the 6th, as you went to do your duties of covering that day, which was, we knew it was going to be a big day. We knew it was going to be an important day. There were senators and representatives that were there to testify, to appeal for the electors to consider their thoughts and the things that have gone on, the irregularities that happened in the election. I know all of that. That's what they were there. What were your expectations going in to the Capitol building that day?
Yes. So I knew it was going to be a long night, but I definitely, like you said, I didn't anticipate, I mean, I don't know that anybody anticipated exactly what would happen. But when I walked in, you know, I got there early, had my laptop fired up. I was expecting to cover the certification of electoral votes or the Electoral College vote. We were anticipating that there would be objections, that there would be speeches and arguments, and I was ready to cover all of that, but what I didn't anticipate was that, you know, those arguments, the whole ceremony that was happening would be so interrupted and in such an unprecedented way.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, so I was in the press gallery of the House chamber, and yeah, just was communicating with my editors, letting them know the play-by-play. So my expectations were for a long day. I figured it might well drag into the night, but a routine one, if that makes sense.
And as part of the press corps, you have a particular bird's eye view of the very room where all of this was going on. And you were up there in position, just doing your duties. And I would think probably having a mindset that this is going to be a busy day, a long day, like you said, but not a day that was going to bring about what could be considered to be unprecedented events in the life of Washington, D.C., and for that matter, the United States. But tell us a little bit about what first happened when you knew that something had gone awry.
Yes. So I first started to get an indication that something had gone wrong when there were press aides that, you know, they're usually kind of in a back room and were, you know, in the gallery, just covering what's happening. Like you said, looking down at the lawmakers who are giving speeches. And at that point, the House and the Senate had separated. They had gone back to their respective chambers to debate the first objection that had been made over Arizona. And so some press aides came through and they told us reporters to make sure that we had everything we needed in case there was a lockdown. And everything happened really fast. So I sort of pieced it all together later. But what had happened was one of the buildings had to be evacuated because of a pipe bomb that was found near the Republican National Headquarters. And it was pretty close to another building. And so at first, you know, we were like a little bit wary about, oh, maybe that would affect us too. But then those people were able to go back. You know, it seemed like all was fine. But then rioters breached the building. They pushed past Capitol Hill police and started to push their way inward into the Capitol towards the House and the Senate chambers.
Mm-hmm. And your perch is actually in the balcony of that chamber, right?
Yes, the House chamber, correct. Sometimes I'm on the Senate side, but today I was on the House side.
Yes.
Yes. And so the building has been closed to the public since March, like since the COVID-19 pandemic first started to spread in the United States. And so just the fact that people were able to breach at all was just stunning. But the House is in session and all of a sudden someone from Capitol Police began to make an announcement. And he said, you know, there has been a breach of the building. Everyone's please stay calm. We're working to contain the situation. So there was kind of confusion and sort of babbling of questions from all the lawmakers. A few minutes later, he made another announcement. He told people that there were gas masks located under their seats. And they might need those. They might need to be prepared to evacuate soon. So at this point, you know, there was a little bit of panic going on in the lower chamber. Mm-hmm. In the upper chamber, we also, the press aides came through and they began handing us what are called gas hoods. They're basically these clear plastic things that go over your head down to your shoulders. And that's in case police have to spray some kind of tear gas to get rid of protesters or rioters, basically, that will protect you. So, you know, I'm sort of a dual mindset right now. I'm watching the confusion happen, but I'm trying to open my gas mask, but I'm also trying to keep an eye on what's happening because I just know it's really important. So anyway, that's all happening. And then we start to hear this banging. And right before that, police start to evacuate the lawmakers that are in the chamber below. Mm-hmm. So we're all still kind of in the gallery.
Oh.
We suddenly get an order. Okay, you have to go now. You have to evacuate. And police are in the gallery with us and they're telling us we have to leave. So we start to leave. And then I've made it maybe five steps, and then the orders change, and they say, "Get down, everybody, get down now." Oh. So we all start crouching behind benches. We hear these really loud bangings, I heard what I thought was a shot. I think looking back that it was a shot. I think I heard the gun fired that ended up killing a woman.
Yes.
And so, you know, I thought I was in an active shooter situation, basically. Like I didn't know what to make of it at the time. So everybody behind me, in front of me is crouched down. We hear banging and I kind of edge around the bench that I was hiding behind, and I have a direct view of the main door of the chamber, and there are rioters basically on the other side of the glass, and they've broken the glass. And there's a small group of lawmakers and Capitol Hill police that have gotten a big piece of furniture, and they've blocked the door with the furniture. And so most of the lawmakers have left. They had been evacuated safely at this point, but there were still some.
I think that's that picture we've all seen where there is a lawmaker with a blue shirt on and several other people with their guns, probably Glocks, all aimed at that broken glass. Is that the picture you're talking about?
Correct. Yes. I had a bird's eye view of that.
My goodness.
And so, you know, we're not sure what's happening. We just know that all of a sudden the seat of democracy basically has been invaded. And that Capitol Hill police has this crisis situation on their hands. Mm-hmm. So we were there, you know, I don't know, maybe a minute. And then police was like, okay, you guys need to go now. And so, we managed to evacuate the chamber. We go down several flights of stairs. There's a system of tunnels, basement tunnels that allow you to move throughout the Capitol complex. So we went from the Capitol building to one of the House buildings. And we basically were in a really large room in lockdown. And we were told, you know, don't tell anybody where you are, because we knew that rioters were still in the building, and we didn't know exactly what their purposes were at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, later, you know, there were reports of people breaking into offices, sort of desecrating and carrying things off. So thankfully, you know, most of the lawmakers had been evacuated safely and ended up being in secure locations. And I'm very grateful as well that I was able to also be evacuated and be in lockdown safely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, it's hard to describe. It was an insane afternoon. I was, you know, on the phone with my editors trying to let them know what was happening. It would take three or four hours before Capitol Police had secured the building and gotten the protesters out. And so we were in lockdown, I think, until from like 3 p.m. until about 8:30 or 9. And then that's when lawmakers went back to their duty and would go on to certify the Electoral College votes late that night.
What a day, what a time that you had to live through. And did you hang around after the lockdown ended at 9? Did you hang around for a while longer, or was it like, let's get out of here?
I hung around for a couple hours, but I did head home a little bit before the actual vote happened. I was still sort of monitoring it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to make sure that I could still get home, that I wouldn't end up having to, you know, spend the night somewhere in the building. And it was very striking when I walked in that day, that morning, little knowing how the day was going to go. You know, I saw a Capitol Police officer here and there. They were obviously at the entrances on the inside when I went into the building. But when I walked out, the whole street was just like armed to the teeth with you know, cop cars, and the parking lot that I was in actually had a big contingent of National Guard people who had arrived, and you know, the troops had gotten out by the time that I got out, which was around midnight.
Well, around that area, when anything like that happens, they're going to call for a code, maybe a code red or something like that, and it's going to bring people coming from everywhere all of the help. But I know that a part of what made this so possible is that no one could have anticipated, because historically, at none of the rallies for things like this by the people, either of the president or those of the party that they represent, nothing like this had happened. And there was no, I guess, no imagination that anything like this could have happened. I don't know if you were aware, acutely aware, of the amount of people that was at the Washington Monument across the mall prior to when you arrived or not. But I have friends that were there and have given me their side of the story, as they actually did the walk with the whole group. But it was a scary thing to see what happened and to watch the video of what happened when some of the people, overzealous people for sure, and I don't have a clue that anything more than to say than that, but that is certainly disrespectful, overzealous people who are going up to Capitol Hill policemen who were clearly not expecting such a reception, clearly not equipped with enough barriers, enough personnel to handle what was about ready to go wrong. And go wrong it did. But Harvest, I'm so glad that you are okay.
Thank you. Yes, I'm very grateful as well. And absolutely, like you said, there were obviously thousands of people there who remained peaceful the entire time, who went home, who committed no illegal activities or had no desire to. Unfortunately, there were others who did migrate over from the rally to the Capitol or were already there. There was also clearly a contingent of folks who were planning to storm the Capitol. And I imagine there were also individuals who just got caught up in the moment. But as far as preparedness, kind of piecing together what went wrong with the security for the event afterwards, there was some reporting that Capitol Police turned down the National Guard's offers for reinforcements a few days before January 6th, and that they had planned only for a free speech demonstration. They weren't planning for anything to go awry.
Mm-hmm, right.
So I think, there were some signs that people were planning to storm the Capitol. There were, posters and messages circulating on parts of the internet ahead of time. But for whatever reason, the threat level or whatever just was not realized in time. So I think there is going to be, a reckoning. Congress is going to have to reckon with how a mob was able to so thoroughly overrun and subdue the seat of democracy, which has so much symbolic and actual power. And it is just such a serious and troubling thing.
It certainly is, and I pray it never happens again. And I know there's a call out, and that's what we're going to be talking about in our next segment with Harvest. There's a call out of concern and vigilance about what's going to happen on the 20th, next Wednesday, when the inauguration is set. And that's going to be the next big calendar item that we're all going to be watching, not only there in D.C., but in the capitals of every state across the country. Everybody's on high alert. I'll tell you what, folks, if you want to read Harvest's story that she's written, all you have to do is Google her name, Harvest Prude, just the way it sounds, Harvest Prude, and you're going to get the first link that comes up. When I did that on Google was the story that she's written for World Magazine. Click on that, and right there, I mean, you're a prolific writer. You do a lot of writing, but your story, your account, it's fascinating reading. My wife and I read it last night. Unbelievable, Harvest. We are going to take a quick break. I'll be back with Harvest coming up in just a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. Back for one more segment with Harvest Prude. Boy, I've enjoyed this chat with you and the amazing eyewitness account that she's given us. If you missed it, if you just tuned in, two things you can do. Number one, you can go to Google, type in Harvest Prude, And you can read, actually, her article for World Magazine. Harvest is the Capitol Hill correspondent for World. And you can read her own words, obviously, tomorrow, that when this becomes a podcast on our website. You can listen to the entire thing in full. And please do, as always, share what you hear on the program. Share it, send it, send the link. And we would love that. It's so helpful to get the word out and to give other people an opportunity, I think, to be helped by the words of Harvest. Because, again, she's a believer, number one. Number two, she was there working for World Magazine, perched in the balcony of the hall, the chamber for the House of Representatives, when all of this broke loose. And it, I can't imagine the terror, Harvest, of what it was like for you to be handed basically a gas mask, a hood that is a form of a gas mask that goes all the way over your head and onto your shoulders, and you're told to wear it and duck. Wow, that had to be a scary thing.
Yes, it definitely was frightening. It was, I just didn't know what exactly was happening in the moment. I never actually managed to get the gas mask on, I will say. I was probably a little bit too concerned with trying to see what was happening. So I was opening the thick packaging, and I was pulling it out, and I sort of activated it. I kind of got it whirring, but it makes kind of a little buzzing sound as it's going. But you know, by the time all that was happening, we evacuated the next moment, and thankfully there didn't turn out to be a need for that gas hood. But
well, Harvest heard the events, heard the banging, heard a shot that was without a doubt the fatal shot of just so tragic. So many things that should never have happened that did go down. And we pray never will go down again. But in the time that we have left, Harvest, and I want to thank you. I just feel like you're so heroic, home nursing through COVID and still the hibernation, the quarantine. I felt like I was hibernating when I was in quarantine. I tell you, that is for sure. But here you are and serving us all, fighting through the COVID fog that anyone who's dealt with this thing, they know exactly what you're talking about. What do you think right now, if you could give a description as being not only a D.C. resident, but one that is charged with writing on the events of the Capitol in particular, when you look at the kind of the atmosphere and maybe people's expectations, people's attitudes, what do you see that area being like now, looking forward to what will happen post inauguration day?
Yes. So I think, it's a little tough to give you my eyewitness account just because, like you said, I am still in isolation and quarantine, unfortunately. And I'll probably still be on the tail end of this by the time inauguration happens, which is unfortunate. But like you said, the Capitol is on high alert. They have called out, I think, 26,000 National Guardsmen to bolster Capitol Police to secure the Capitol. It's going to be a very different inauguration. Regardless of what happened on January 6th because of the pandemic. I think it was going to be probably considerably scaled down. Mm-hmm, but right. I mean, that really changed things as well. So, you know, usually supporters of the president can gather onto the National Mall and watch a parade and kind of be an eyewitness to what's happening. But the mall is going to be closed. I think most of it is going to be, you know, most people are just going to end up watching via live stream. I think, you know, you bring up a good point that this is obviously a very, the seat of power in America, but it's also people's homes, and it's also, you know, where folks are trying to raise their kids and go to church and grocery shop and deal with this pandemic and all of those things. So I think everyone is hoping that things sort of stay peaceful and quiet and stay safe.
Mm. Well, I pray they do. And I pray that across the country, we can have a day on Wednesday that will be nothing like that other Wednesday. Nothing at all. Thank you very much. That's what we're praying for, Harvest. And we're also praying for you, that God would just bring you up and out of this this COVID. And boy, I tell you, it is affecting so many people. And those of us that have gone through it really empathize, and I know you do as well. And I wish you the best in the remaining days and pray that you just continue to get better. And I just want to say thank you so much for giving us this time today in the middle of that. That is, again, just so marvelous. And I have one more question before you go. You said this up front, going back to your roots of Paducah, Kentucky. And I mentioned my my favorite all-time music artist is Stephen Curtis Chapman. Now, I had a chance to meet him for the first time in late 2018, and then we had him at our church in 2019. Oh my goodness. What? Sorry, said those years wrong. 2017 was when I first met him, and then in 2018 he came to our church. Did you ever get to see him in Paducah?
That's incredible. I'm so glad you've got to meet him. No, unfortunately, I have not. But there is a music store called Chapman Music
yes.
in Paducah, and yes, it's wonderful. And I have taken music lessons there.
Now, you know, that's his dad's store.
Yes, it is. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. And anyone that ever wants to hear his dad and also Stephen's brother, they can get the Cracker Barrel version of I think it's called Deep Roots, I believe, or something like that, is the name of the CD. And Stephen Curtis Chapman and his brother and his dad, they all sing just marvelously on that CD. And oh my goodness, I love it. And you can tell that I'm a fan all the way. Love Paducah, Kentucky. And Harvest, it's been awesome having you on my program today. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Don't forget the new time starting on Monday. My show will start at 3:05 across the network. I'll see you then.